On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. All right, everybody, I'm here with Drew Widener of the Seattle Mariners organization. Drew, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Yeah, I'm from a small town in Minnesota. Kind of just grew up loving the game, loving baseball. And between my junior and senior year of college is when I really got into S&C. So took an internship at Concordia St. Paul and then finished out my senior year at Gustavus Adolphus College. And then took another internship at the University of Wisconsin, got a little full-time job at University of Minnesota Duluth, and then decided to apply down with the Mariners, got an internship down there, and just kind of worked my way up.
So when did you graduate, and like how long were you interning and doing these jobs like at Minnesota Duluth?
So I graduated college in 2019, okay. Took an internship at Wisconsin for about 6 months, then got the opportunity at Duluth. Was there for about a year and a half. It was weird with COVID and everything. And then, yeah, in May of 21, I got the job with the Mariners. So,
gotcha. And then, I mean, we were talking before, but AZL and then now up into the Northwest League, correct?
Correct. Yeah. Up to Everett, cold and rainy.
Cold and rainy. That's okay. The Aqua Sox?
Yeah.
I've always been intrigued by that league. I feel like there's a lot of good places up there. Like it's an area of the country I've always wanted to explore, the Northwest. I just haven't gotten up there. Am I like correct in my thinking?
Yeah, there's some cool spots. Vancouver, that place is always rocking. They sell it out on the weekends for sure. And when we were up there for the playoffs, it was insane. Getting to play at University of Oregon was pretty sweet down there in Eugene. Who is it? Oh, Hillsboro Hops. They do it right. They do it right in Hillsboro. So, a lot of cool little spots that you wouldn't really think about.
So one of my former athletes when I was in grad school as a GA is the strength coach in Vancouver now. Tommy's the man.
Yeah.
Awesome dude. And he always tells me like, it's great up in Vancouver, like really cool spot. And like, just doesn't feel like, you know, lower level minor leagues. Like he said, they always are like sold out. The crowds are good and everything. So,
yeah.
So you guys played them in the playoffs then this year?
Yeah. Yep. We got to go up there. The last three games of the series were in Vancouver, which is perfect because it was, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And that's when they really pack it out, and especially for the playoffs. So that was pretty cool, especially because, you know, you go to some of these other minor league parks and stuff, and there's maybe 1,000 fans there. It was like 7,500 in Vancouver, and it's a whole different atmosphere. It was a lot of fun.
Well, let me tell you about no fans in minor league games. Like I came from the Appy League, so, and where I was, it was like we had like 20 people in Bristol at games, and they all kind of just walked in with their own food and everything. So I've seen the lowest of lows in attendance and the highest of highs. But so kind of going along here, what is your best professional baseball story that you have so far? Either something that makes you laugh, something that makes you smile, something you're proud of, just what's your best memory thus far?
Yeah. So I'd say just making the playoffs. When we clinched against Eugene, kind of that last week of the season, we went into the week, knowing that we had to win one, and game one of the series, we got it. So, real quick, sent the clubby, to go get some champagne and tarp off the locker rooms. And that's something that I'll remember forever and look back on, because that was sweet. You know, I've never been a part of a champagne shower before. So for sure something I'm proud of.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun. And it's definitely a lot of fun when you can get it out of the way early and then like just, you know, the tension is gone. So that's cool that you guys got to do that. And then you played Vancouver championship or like semifinals? How does that work down at that level?
Yeah. So in our league, there's only six teams.
Okay.
There's no divisions. There's no, okay. It's just, we take the first half winner and the second half winner and they play for the championship. So, yeah, we played Vancouver in a 5-game and that was it.
Okay.
Ended up losing in 4, which sucked, but Still a lot of fun playing extra baseball at the end of the year, a lot more than going home.
Yeah. Oh, it makes it worth it. You know, the long grind of the season when you get to play those playoff games at the end, and it goes so fast. It's just like, you know, it's there, you're celebrating, you're playing, and then like season's over and you're like, what just happened? But yeah. I'm glad that you got to enjoy it. I'm glad that you got to experience it. And like you said, it's something that you'll remember the rest of your life, I'm sure. So we were talking about this one beforehand, but what do you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing?
Yeah, and it might not be anything like too wild and crazy, but I just think like everything has to make logical sense to me. I'm not gonna give my guys anything that is, you know, something that I don't understand. It like if they come to me and want to kind of pick it apart, because you know, you have those guys that are, you know, exercise science majors in college, and then now they're professional athletes, and they just kind of, they have an understanding of it. So if I can't explain it to a guy, I'm not gonna have him do it. And so kind of the thing that I like just wrote down before this was just do the simple things very well, very consistently. And that's going to be better than anything you can give a guy that's, you know, too wild and crazy.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And that was one of the things very early in my career that one of my mentors had taught me, was just like, if it's in your program, you have to justify why it's there. Like, you can't just throw something in for the sake of having it there. And we had done like we wrote an actual program and then sat down and went over it with him. And it was like, why do you have this instead of this? Why this rep range? Why that? And like you said, there's guys now that are exercise science majors in college, and then they just happen to be players, be really good players. So, you know, obviously you pursue that as long as you can. And there's kind of that big range of like, there's guys that don't care. They're just going to do it. Like if you tell them, they'll do it, you know, and then there's guys that want to know why for everything. And those are especially the guys that are a little bit educated. They're almost like, I don't want to say dangerous, but it's like, if you don't have an explanation for something and they have a different explanation or something, like you can't find that common ground. Like you may lose them and any of their friends that they have, because then they're like, oh, this guy, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Like, I learned this in school. This is really the right thing. Like, so those guys are, I don't want to say dangerous, that's not the right word, but those guys will definitely hold you accountable. And if you don't have your ducks in a row, like, you know, they'll make sure that you do.
Yeah. And they force you to be on it, which is, you know, kind of some days a blessing and a curse, especially when you play 132 in the minor leagues. You know, it's like, man, I got to be on it 132 of 150. And if I'm not, he's going to call me on it. Which, like I said, it's sometimes it's good, probably good for the long run. But sometimes just like when you're in it, it's like, man, like, just do it, you know, like,
yes,
as
yes.
I said, but
yes, exactly.
It's just not good enough.
No, yeah, I would agree with you 100%. And like you said, I think in the long run, most of the times it's probably good. And especially like, if you build a good relationship with those guys, you can have a little bit deeper of a conversation with them. And, you know, sometimes when we get into it, like we just don't have anybody to talk to strength and conditioning wise. You know, in the big leagues, it's a blessing that you have two guys at just about every major league play. So like you can bounce ideas. But I can remember days in the minor leagues where I was just kind of like, man, I need somebody to talk shop with. But like, right, everybody else is working right now because we all have the same schedule. I'm like, I don't, like, I have this idea, I need somebody to bounce it off of. And then, you know, like one of the players was like exercise science, or he had like trained at Cressy's, or like, you know, spent his off season at Driveline. Like, and you can talk with those guys and be like, hey, have you seen this at this facility? And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, like, this guy wants to talk shop. And then before you know it, that guy's like attached to your hip. And then sometimes, like you said, it's like, you know, just leave me alone and just do what I want you to do. But there are days where you can bounce the ideas off of them. And sometimes they come up with stuff you don't even think about.
Right. And that's what was, it was really nice the first couple of years that I was in professional baseball, just because, you know, as an intern, I was kind of under the AZL guy. And so I, you know, and our coordinators are down in Arizona. So it was like, okay, I mean, that's pretty easy. They're around, we can talk shop, whatever. And then even when I became the full-time AZL guy, it was like, coordinators are still here. I have an intern that knows what's going on. And we can talk shop a little bit. But yeah, once you get out to an affiliate, you're kind of on an island out there. And you really just have to bank on like, all right, well, I hope this guy picks up the phone because I have some ideas, you know, and, or yeah, you're relying on a player that knows a little something.
Yeah. Genius strikes at like 3:30 and you're like, well, I can't really do anything about this because I got to run stretch and I know every other affiliate guy's probably running stretch right now. And like, you know, I like, let me write this note down really quick. And then you text one of the other coaches like 11 at night, like, hey, you have time to talk? And like, no, I'm in bed. Like, can it wait till tomorrow? And you're like, I'm going to forget my thought. But yeah, no, that, I mean, to me, like, I don't know if it's crazy or not, but I think at least auditing yourself and holding yourself to that standard and that accountability, especially, like you said, players are becoming more educated and they're just genuinely like curious about training. And, you know, they see the benefits of training and how it can relate to their performance. And so they want to maximize their performance. And so they are more invested in that, which is a great thing.
Yeah.
And for us, we have to be more accountable to everything that we do and have rhyme and reason to everything. So, like I said, I think in the long run, I think it's a good thing overall. I would bet there's probably a lot of people that would agree with that sentiment, but they may not hold themselves to that level of accountability, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah,
you know, they may talk the talk, but when it comes time, you got to walk the walk too. So
right.
I think sometimes easier said than done, but at the same time, I think if you really want to maximize your program and your relationships with players, like you have to, you know, have everything just make sense.
Yeah. And I think to your point too, just having that like mentor early on, that just says like, hey, go write a program for, well, when I was at Wisconsin, it was Billy Breiter. He was like the strength coach for wrestling and swim and dive. And I think I'm forgetting one, but yeah. So he was, you know, he did the exact same thing. Just like, hey, I want you to write a program for baseball off season, you know, whatever, and we're going to pick it apart tomorrow, you know? So like having that experience is super, super valuable.
Yeah. Mine was Zach Dakin down at TCU and,
okay.
You know, Zach's one of the big names in college baseball. So like learning from him was huge for me. And that was the lesson, one of the many lessons that I learned from him, but just one of them right off the bat. And like, I can remember just being incredibly nervous to give him this like 4-week program and just, all right, he's going to tear it apart. And then he picked like, I don't know, it was like the most random thing. Like, why are you doing this instead of that? And I was like, so thrown off. Cause it was like, you know, a filler exercise. And he was like, this is like the area that like, you know, you can make a difference with guys. Like, you have to focus all the way through your program. Like, you know, a lot, like, the big stuff, like everybody's kind of nailing that. It's like the individual stuff that can really make a difference with, you know, this pitcher versus that pitcher, like focusing in on those details. And then, like you said, obviously just doing basics really well. We're all doing relatively similar things. It's just making sure that those are locked in. And like you said, you have a rhyme and a reason for, you know, I'm doing this exercise instead of that with this guy, and being mm-hmm. able to defend your program, I think is really important. And I think, like having somebody do that for you, even now, like having somebody do that for you, I think is really valuable. Like I said, in the big leagues, you have at least 2 strength coaches. Some organizations have 3, and just being able to bounce ideas off of each other and like hold each other accountable for that, I think for me has been really, really valuable. Just like my boss allows me to write most of the programming, but at the same time, like I value his input and we sit down and go over it together in case there's anything I missed or, you know, he thinks that should be in the program. So I think even now that, you know, you're moving up, like I would make sure I stay on top of that as well. And just for anybody listening, like be open-minded, don't be afraid to like have your programs torn apart and like, don't take it personally. Like we're all just trying to give the best for the athletes. Right.
Yeah. Just moving the needle in the right way, you know, in the right direction. Yeah. Let's keep it going.
Exactly. So you were the Northwest League Strength and Conditioning Coach of the Year. So first and foremost, congrats to you. That's thank awesome. You. I've had a ton of winners on here. I've said it 9 million times at this point. Like it's voted on by your peers. So, you know, the other strength coaches in the league are taking notice of what you do and they think you're doing it well. And for me, I want to know what it is. You know, what is it that makes, you know, you and in general a strength and conditioning coach successful?
Yeah. I think the big one that sticks out for me is just adaptability. You'd like in the minor leagues, rarely does it go to plan. One day might, you know, and then the rest of the five that you play that week don't. So just, you know, being adaptable. You know, if their weight room isn't open, when you need it to be open, it's, well, we got a barbell and, you know, some foul ground. So here we go. So yeah, that's kind of like the big one. That's for me, it just kind of translates to like, okay, like the athletes see it, your coaching staff sees it, the other strength and conditioning coach sees it. And it's just kind of like just making things work, because especially in the minor leagues, like I said, it's just, it rarely goes to plan. So you got to kind of, have a plan B, C, D, E, and F, because, you know, A, B, C, D might not be there for you. So, yeah, just definitely just being adaptable, I think, is the big one.
I will tell you this. It's not just the minor leagues, brother. It's when you get to the big leagues, it's the same. Things rarely go to plan anywhere in professional baseball. And some of that is weather. Some of that is travel. Some of that is, you know, those big obvious ones. And then some of it is like the guy comes in and is just not feeling it that day. His kid didn't sleep. He's having, you know, trouble at home. Or on the flip side, like he's extra motivated to do something more. And, you know, you want him to run 6 half pulls and he's like, no, I'm going to run 8 full pulls. And then the next day he comes in gassed and you're like,
yeah, absolutely crushed.
I tried to tell you this. You didn't want to listen. You know, it's the same, you know, as you move up, there are still those just, you know, expect the unexpected moments. And I would say the one thing is as you move up, the magnitude of it is probably a little bit greater in the sense of like, you know, there's cameras around, there's more people around, there's more media around. And just, you know, being cognizant of like having those extra backup plans for yourself just in case, so that if something does go off the rails, it doesn't even look like you missed a beat. I think that would be, you know, for me to you as you move up, like you'll notice that there's just more eyes on you and like the mistakes or, you know, and it's not even a mistake sometimes when things go not as planned, like it's almost like the strength coach is the one that has to like get everything back on track, right? Like if you're supposed to have stretch at 4:20 and the guys don't come out till 4:30 and BP starts at 4:40, like you got to be the one to adjust your plan to make sure BP starts on time. Like it's not, you know, BP window doesn't keep getting pushed back because a meeting went late or something. Like it's almost like we're the ones to kind of like get everybody back on track. Way easier said than done. Way easier said than done. But it is the same fight no matter where you go. It's just a little bit more magnified the higher up you get. But having those skills early on, I think would help you as you move up. And just anybody that's listening, right? Like if you can herd a bunch of young 18-year-old, you know, 18 to 20-year-old stray cats in the lower levels, like you should be able to take care of some adults as you move up. Hopefully, although yeah. some of the adults are just as bad as the children, but no, that's, I mean, I think everywhere in professional baseball and then, you know, specifically in the minor leagues, like having, you know, lack of gym space sometimes, I think in the, like you say, in the big leagues, we have, you know, a visiting gym at every ballpark. So like, we don't have to set up road buses or like, you know, pull the barbell out on the warning track or anything. Like we actually have somewhat of a facility everywhere we go. So in that aspect, there are kind of those checks and balances, but I think learning those skills early on in the minor leagues, and like I've said it a million times on here, like having minor league strength and conditioning experience is just so invaluable for every strength coach. Cause most of the time you can just throw the textbook out and just, all right, what can we do today with this? You know,
right.
I got one med ball and I got 15 guys. Like, what kind of training are we going to get?
Here we go. Yep. No, and I think to your point too, like the, even from the AZL to high A, I mean, like that's not a, I wouldn't say that's a massive jump by any means, but I mean, even the, there's media, there's cameras around at high A that there just wasn't in Peoria, you know? So, yeah, I can only imagine that it gets more and more as you go up.
Yeah, I think I've said this story on here before, but my first year was in the Appy League, which at the time was like low rookie. It was like, but it was right above what would be the AZL or the FCL. And we had a kid like freeze up on the mound. And I was like, what is going on? And the manager was like, he's never pitched under the lights before. And I was like, really? And he's like, because in the FCL, they don't play night games. They play day games. I know in the AZL, they do night games, I think.
Yep.
So he had never pitched under the lights. So he like froze up. And I was like, you know, this is just another factor I would not have even thought twice of. You know what I mean? Like, just, you know, like American kids, like I played Little League under the lights at 10 years old. You know what I mean? And this kid had come from another country. He just had never pitched under the lights. He didn't know how to respond. And like, he went out his next outing and he was fine. But it was just like something that I would have never thought of, you know, like I was saying earlier, is like those things just don't always go to plan. And like, you could have never prepared for that. I would have never known the difference, you know, but it's like that kid just went out and just stood on the mound and like looked around like he was in game 7 of the World Series. And like I said, we had probably like 15, 20 people there under the lights, you know what I mean? Watching this game. And it's just like, oh, okay. Like just another wrinkle that you wouldn't expect. So, some of those minor league, really, really out of the box ones, you know, bus breakdowns and like showing up to the game, or like when you have flights and your gear doesn't actually make it to the field. Like all of that stuff is just, it's not in the textbook, and you have to figure out how to adapt to it.
On the fly. Let's go.
On the fly. Exactly. How about advice for others in the field, either young coaches looking to get in or just older coaches trying to stay on top of things? Just what kind of advice do you have for us?
I think mostly, I mean, I don't have much for the older guys, but young guys, I can just kind of speak to my experience, like just literally what we were just talking about, just be ready to be adaptable. You can't really show the players or the staff that's around you that, like, you know, internally you might be freaking out, but you know, you just got to kind of be ready for it. So that's kind of a big one. And then, have a plan and be ready for plans B through Z, because plan A rarely goes to plan. So.
Yeah. I like the point you make there of like, even if you're freaking out internally, like you got to be just calm and cool on the outside, because if the players or coaches see you freaking out, one, they're probably going to just absolutely wear you out about it. And then two, like they're going to be panicking. And again, I don't know why it is this way, but it just feels like the strength coach is like the one to just bring everything back, calm everything down. Like, don't worry guys, we're all right. You know? And then like you go find a little quiet area for yourself and you freak out and panic or whatever. But the immediate picture, you gotta be that like presence of just calm for them. Mm-hmm. And let them know like, hey, it's okay. We'll get this done. We're on time. Cause you know, the guys will show up late and then the coaches are standing there like kind of hawk-eyeing you. And you're like, I know I'll get them to infield drills on time. Trust me. I got this. And then you get them on time and the coaches are like, let's go. You're our guy. You know, like, you know,
like that's in April and that's it.
That's just how it is. So like, I would agree with you 100%. It's just, and the thing is, I don't know if there's a way to practice that, right? Like before you get in, it's like almost something you just have to experience and just kind of roll with the punches. Would you agree? Like, is that kind of your experience as well?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, like, you're just like, you don't know until you're in it, you know, that like, oh, like, this is what he meant by that. And it like, even the story that you were telling, like you didn't even think about the guy would freeze up under the lights. Like that wasn't even part of, you know, something that you had considered. And like, you know, that's just part of it. And I think too, like another just piece of advice is just like, find like, it's going to take you kind of going through it to find like what you need to know, or like, find out what you're not good at. So like there's a lot of this that like I can't even like, because I don't know what you don't know, and it's part of it too, like you don't know what you don't know until it's kind of thrown in your face a little bit.
Exactly. So,
you just got to kind of be ready for everything and just live it.
I that's the biggest thing, is like you don't know what each day is going to present to you. And you may think you have things under control. And for the most part, the schedule is relatively the same. And once you get your feet like underneath you, it's okay. But there is going to be something new almost every day. It may be really small, it may be really big, but you have to be open to that. And you have to be, you know, humble enough to like admit that you don't know everything. And if something goes wrong, like you just kind of got to go with it, and you got to laugh it off or smile or just carry on like everything is, you know, business as usual. And then, like I said, if you go in your own little private corner and, you know, cry or scream or, you know, throw a med ball or punch a wall, whatever, like whatever gets you through that,
you got to, you know, do
just do it away from people. But when you're in the moment, like I said, as soon as you get flustered, players are just going to devour that. It's just like they're looking to just, all right, let's see if we can, you know, tear this guy apart. Like, yeah. I've probably told this story too. Like, I used to have a sheet of paper with conditioning for like the whole month on it. Mm-hmm. And I pulled it out one day. This was in AAA in 2019. And one of the guys took it from my hand and just ripped it in half and then ripped it again and dropped it on the ground and just looked at me. And I was like this with this guy. We were super close, but he was just doing it to get, you know, get a reaction from me. And I picked it up and I was like, all right, you're going to go run. And they're like, yeah. So I taped the paper, and the next day for conditioning, I pulled the same paper out and it had like 9 million pieces of tape on it, and everybody's laughing. And I'm like, all right, like I get it. I understand. Like the paper is probably a little excessive. You guys are adults, but also I can make a joke too. Right. So like you have to really like understand that. Some, you can't take it personal. Like sometimes it's just them literally just trying to like get a reaction out of you, because you spend so much time together that it's like, all right, this guy is, you know, we try to be a consistent presence, and they just try to see if they can break you of that sometimes, literally just for their own enjoyment.
Yeah. Just because they, you know, need a good laugh or like.
Exactly. And when you look at it that way, like you can laugh at it too. Like it's not them attacking you, it's just them trying to get a laugh, because we're together all the time, and like sometimes you're the butt of the jokes and sometimes you're the one throwing the jokes, you know what I mean? And
right,
like, when your time comes to be the butt of the joke, you just got to laugh with them and you're fine. But again, when you're not in it, it's really, really hard to understand that. Really hard until you get in and you experience it, and then your first time out, like, you know, somebody's like, "Nah, I'm not running today," and walks off, and you're like, "I don't know what to do in this situation."
Yep. You know what I
mean? Like, all right, well, this is what they were talking about on that episode of the PBS CCS podcast, and I don't know how to react to it.
Well, and like, I think in a lot of times in those situations, just what I've learned is like, you have to just, like, the worst thing you can do is freeze up. Like, you have to just make a decision and go with it, and then just live with whatever results come of it, you know, and tweak it for next time. But like, guys are going to look to you and just go like, okay, what are you going to do?
Like, right.
With your sheet half a couple times and go, what are you going to do?
Yes. 100%. Just stare at you and just see what your reaction is. And like you said, I think picking one side or the other, if you freeze up, that's not, even if you make the wrong choice.
Exactly.
And then the next day you come back and you're like, okay, I had time to think about it. Like,
yep,
I was wrong. You guys are right. Like, you know, but if you're,
my bad.
Yeah, my bad. Won't happen again. I learned. Yeah. I understand. My fault. But no, I think that's like very, very relevant for everybody that's ever worked in professional baseball. I'm sure everybody that's ever worked in pro ball could give you a story like that. And it's something I don't want to like scare people away that are not in the game but are interested in getting in the game, you know what I mean? Because it is a lot of fun, and it's, you know, for the most part the guys make everything really light and they joke around. It's just when you spend 162 days out of 180 days, you know, in the big leagues together, like at some point, like somebody's gonna piss you off, and at some point you're gonna piss somebody off. Like, it's just the nature of the beast, right? Like, and when it comes, like you said, you just make your decision, you move on, and like, they can't hate you forever, right? And like, you can't hate them forever, because it's just, it's too exhausting to like genuinely have hate towards each other. So like, you know, you just settle your differences. And the other thing is, like, I would say almost every strength coach I've ever talked to, probably everyone that's been in pro ball that I've talked to, is like, they have the player's best interest at heart. And when you have that, like, the players know that, and sometimes you just make mistakes and they can forgive you for that. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I don't want us to like discourage anybody from getting into pro ball. That's not the point here. It's just like, at some point, like the reality is like something like this is going to pop up, and that's okay. It's all good.
Yeah.
How about continuing education resources, books to read, seminars to attend, podcasts to listen to? Like, where are you going to keep yourself on top of things?
So a lot of like what I just kind of gravitate towards is just like the self-improvement type books, just like sharpening like mental game, because that's the biggest thing. I mean, like, you know, just about anybody can handle the 150 or 180 at the major league level. But the mental thing is just kind of like where I kind of fall back on. So books that I've really enjoyed that have helped me a lot are just Extreme Ownership, Atomic Habits, and like Can't Hurt Me were kind of like my three that were like, okay, just kind of helped me out a lot. And then as far as like more kind of in the realm of SNC, podcasts would be like Yoakum Strength. So that's he's a Minnesota guy. I think he just kind of challenges a lot of the mainstream ideas and gets me to think differently, because it's really easy to just kind of dive down a rabbit hole of my own thoughts, especially when, you know, like we talked about earlier, you're just kind of out on that island at your affiliate. PJF is another one. That's like a NBA guy. I kind of like to kind of go all over the place. Cressy's is another good one. He's more baseball specific. And then Just Fly, I think, is another one that I've taken some ideas from and gotten me to think just differently.
I find myself looking at Austin Yoakum's stuff a lot, and
yeah,
there are sometimes like where I'm like, nah, I don't know. Yep. And then there's sometimes where I'm like, I think he's right. Like, and I can't decide, like, yeah. I guess I don't have to, right? Like, you don't have to like or dislike everything from somebody. But he does, like you said, I do genuinely like his stuff, because he just challenges the norm, and he's like, this is it. If you don't like it, I don't care. Like,
yeah,
you can comment that you disagree. Like, I'm not going to listen to you. I'm just going to keep doing the things I want to do. And he does have a lot of savages that he trains, himself included. That's one of the big things that I really like, is he's, I don't know how recently you've seen his stuff, but he's like trying to become like a really good softball player.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is fine. Yeah. Like, he's actually trying to like commit to, you know, skill acquisition as a coach, which I think is incredibly valuable. But yeah, I do like his stuff. And then obviously all the other books that you've mentioned, the podcast, like just all very, very good resources. I do like the fact that you mentioned the mental side of things, and, you know, getting outside of just strength and conditioning, and even just baseball strength and conditioning. I haven't heard of the PJF one, so I may look into that one. Just learning from other sports, I think, is really valuable, and just hearing their schedules and their training philosophies and things like that, I think, is cool.
Yeah. And I think like the PJF one was cool for me, just because like he trains basketball players primarily. So I think he's trained like James Harden, and like, I think he was with the Suns for a little while. He might still be, but he, you know, just kind of like, there's a lot of parallels to be drawn between even like a sport like basketball, where there's, you know, pretty limited rotation, or like powerful rotation isn't exactly, you know, a primary skill. Whereas like baseball is, but there's still some things that, some principles that you can take away that I'll definitely apply, which I like, those are the kinds of things that I gravitate towards. Cause I think there's times with like baseball specific conversations where it can get very like, we're going down this road and like, we're going to stay here the whole time. So where like, if you kind of just branch off a little bit, it's like, well, maybe we can broaden the scope a little bit, and maybe that helps us capture another athlete's kind of specific situation or something.
Yeah. I think I was actually having this conversation yesterday. I told you, you know, beforehand, I was recording one yesterday, and we were just talking about, you know, general fitness concepts, general strength and conditioning concepts. And sometimes, at least in baseball, like I said, I don't know much about other sports, but it feels like we've gotten too far down this rabbit hole of like baseball only, that we're neglecting these like general concepts of like, you know, good strength and conditioning practices. And so I think for me, sometimes it's good to just hear others. I listen to like Anthony Donskov's podcast, and he does like hockey, high performance hockey. Yeah. Like I love hockey playing. I played growing up, and like to hear them talk about their training and things like that, and trying to just take things that I think are applicable, you know, across any sport. Cause I think you never know, like, you know, we love baseball, but that doesn't mean we'll be in it forever. And being able to just be well-rounded and understand things, I think can make you more marketable elsewhere. And like I said, I think it's just good to listen to other people. And, I think sometimes we're just too far down this like very specific baseball rabbit hole. And it's like, hey, like, take a step back. Like we're still like, yeah, we're still strength and conditioning coaches. Like we still have to do these general things. So it's good that you're listening to other places and you know, reading other things. So before I get you out of here, I want to do a lightning round. Four questions, long or short. And then I promise I'll get you out. You all good with that?
All good. Let's do it.
Cool. All right. So first one, who is your biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning?
So I got three. Billy Breiter, he was that one at Wisconsin that I told you kind of just set the foundation for like my like have a why for everything, rep schemes, exercise selection. Why is it at the beginning and not at the end? Why, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I think that really kind of set the tone for my career going forward. Jeff Mathers, he's the coordinator with the M's right now. He's taught me a lot. I spent 2 years with him down in the AZL. Him and I like, you know, talk all the time. And then Brennan Michelson, he was the guy. I think you've had him on the podcast before, but he was the Everett strength coach, and him and I have an awesome relationship. And he's the one that kind of just, you know, if I have questions, a lot of times I'll go to him. We talk shop all the time in spring training and other camps and stuff. So those are kind of my big three.
If you only had one piece of equipment to train with, what would it be?
Barbell. It's just it's versatile. I can squat, I can push, pull, you know, you name it. A lot of different ways to go with the barbell, in my opinion. So, and it's just easy. I don't know. It's nothing too crazy. So, that's where I'm going to go.
Biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
Probably, Scotty up in the Northwest League. That's, that was a big one this year. I feel like I worked really hard for it. So, we'll say that one.
Any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
If not S&C, I mean, I'd probably go into sport coaching. That'd be my next one. So either baseball or basketball. I did a little bit of that kind of before I got into S&C, and even kind of early in my career, that was what I went to. I enjoy like reffing basketball. I did that growing up. It's a blast. So, if not S&C, I could see myself getting into that. And if nothing else, absolutely no sports related stuff, probably just like blue collar as it gets, you know, just like give me construction, give me whatever, something like that.
Drew, it's been nice to get to know you and to hear your story. And again, congrats on the award this year. If the listeners want to get in touch with you, where can we get more? Social media the best place, or is there a different spot?
I'd say social media is probably like the easiest place for me. I'm private as of right now, but you know, I can change that, but the Instagram handle is going to be dwide6, so dwide6, and then shoot me a follow, shoot me a message, whatever you want to do. So I'm open to talk and shop whenever.
That's what I did, and that's where we're here, right? Like that's how this one started. So I appreciate your time. I appreciate getting to know you, and like I said, one more time, just congrats on the award, and looking forward to talking soon.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Nice to meet you as well, and thanks for having me on. It was a blast.
All right, everybody, that's going to conclude this episode with Drew. I hope you enjoyed this one. I think it's really valuable to have strength coaches on that have won these awards. I've said it many times, but success leaves clues. And I think, you know, hearing the stories and hearing the lessons that the strength coaches that are winning Strength Coach of the Year in their respective leagues, I think it's really valuable for us. So I appreciate his time. I appreciate him sharing with us. And the three things that I took from him in this episode are finding quality mentors can help you to continue progressing in your career, have a reason for everything you put into your program, and have a plan, but be prepared to adjust. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.